If you think about where our clients, where patients live, for example, in northern BC, for a number of people, they don't travel very often out of their community. Some have never traveled outside of their community. So things that we may take for granted, well, what flight do I take to get to the Lower Mainland so I have enough time to get to my appointment? How do I get from the airport to the hospital? Where do I stay if I'm being treated on an outpatient basis? Our team coordinates all of that, including any changes that happen along the way. So it's really that dynamic of all of the financial stress is removed and all of the logistical stress is removed.
Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytané and Tsintsiyan First Nations are your hosts.
I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
You're listening to QualityCast North. Imagine you and your family live in a small rural community in British Columbia. After seeing your local family doctor, and maybe after she's run some tests, she tells you that it could be serious. But you now need to see a specialist doctor at the large tertiary hospital in Vancouver, 15 hours' drive away. What goes through your mind? Perhaps it's the substantial cost of travel and accommodation and time away from home. Maybe it's simply the logistics of navigating a big unknown city. Now, for some, this scenario can seem overwhelming and a significant financial burden, which puts off many from making the journey entirely, meaning they miss out on important medical care. Enter Hope Air, a non-profit organization which can step into the situation to ensure patients in rural communities can get the vital care they need. And to talk about the work of Hope Air is our guest today, the CEO of Hope Air, or Chief Hope Officer, as he also calls himself, Mark Rubenstein. Welcome, Mark. Thank you for joining us on the show today.
Thank you very much, and I'm really delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we always start off our podcast by learning a little bit about our guests. And so I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about yourself, Mark, and how did you come to your role as CEO of Hope Air?
Sure. So I spent the majority of my career in the private sector, really unrelated to healthcare. I was working in media and technology, related industries, and I retired from the private sector about 10 years ago, and my wife informed me at the time that I had way too much energy to be retired and that I really had no choice except to find something else to do that would, be of purpose and also keep me occupied and engaged and be a good match. So I started to do a number of things on the volunteer side. Also doing work on initiatives like Paralympic sport. And I was, increasingly focused on organizations or issues that were purpose-related, that were really trying to engage and make a difference in the community, in the country, and in the world. And so I was contacted about the work of Hope Air and an opportunity to perhaps lead the organization in 2019. And I'm sure, like many of your listeners today, I had never heard of Hope Air. I didn't know what it was. Was it an airline? What did they do? And as I started to research the work of the charity, I became really fascinated by its mission, which was effectively reducing or eliminating barriers of access to healthcare. And then I met the board of directors and sort of fell in love with the board of directors and realized that they were all committed to the same vision. So I joined Hope Air as their chief hope officer just at the beginning of 2020, and I think 2 weeks before the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic.
That's a great story. That's a great journey. And, it's natural, I think, after a career in the private sector to want to give back. And it's great that you were able to do that. Now, Hope Air is celebrating its 40th anniversary, I understand, this year. And so for those listeners who perhaps don't know what the work of Hope Air is. Can you tell us a little bit about who Hope Air is, what it does, and maybe go back a little bit and share some of that origin story and its journey over the 40 years?
Sure. Well, Hope Air was founded by two really incredible people, Ginny Bradshaw and Joan Rogers. One was working in the airline industry, and one was working as a volunteer at a large cancer hospital in Toronto. And they were noticing that patients were traveling by bus, coming in for radiation or chemo treatment, traveling in some cases more than 30 hours each way by bus to get to treatment. And so they asked themselves this question: why would someone who is very sick spend 30 hours on a bus to get to hospital? And the answer then, as now, is that for a lot of people who are especially low income, in poverty, barely making ends meet, or not making ends meet, the cost to fly to that healthcare appointment is simply beyond their means. They simply don't have the money to be able to purchase those flights. So that gave birth to Hope Air. The first flight that took place was in November 1986, a young woman traveling from Moncton, New Brunswick to Toronto for cancer treatment. And when you fast forward to 2026, our 40th anniversary, as you mentioned, you know, we went from a handful of flights back at the beginning of Hope Air to now nationally, because we are a national charity, over 14,000 flights. In BC alone, close to 10,000 flights, along with other program supports, including ground transportation from arrival airport to hospital, accommodation support, meal support, et cetera, et cetera. So that is really the success story of the charity that's had immense impact in, as we say, delivering on the promise of universal healthcare. There's nothing universal about our healthcare system if I can't afford to get to a hospital 1,000 kilometers away. I'm either too sick to drive, the weather doesn't allow me to drive. My preference, of course, would be able to fly and get to care much quicker and much more efficiently. But that's not an option for a lot of people. So Hope Air is really the only organization that's providing non-emergency medical travel support, airline and other programs. We're not just providing that 100% free of charge to patients and their caregivers. So think about children with a parent, think about seniors who have mobility issues. But we're actually coordinating it all. And if you think about where our clients, where patients live, for example, in northern BC, for a number of people, they don't travel very often out of their community. Some have never traveled outside of their community. So things that we may take for granted, well, what flight do I take to get to the lower mainland so I have enough time to get to my appointment? How do I get from the airport to the hospital? Where do I stay if I'm being treated on an outpatient basis? Our team coordinates all of that, including any changes that happen along the way. So it's really that dynamic of all of the financial stress is removed and all of the logistical stress is removed. And for people who are, you know, facing serious and life-threatening illness, the removal of those factors leads to significantly better healthcare outcomes.
Yeah, and that's a really important point to make, is that it's not just the flight aspect, right? Even though that's sort of intrinsic in the name, but it's the entire service, it's the entire health experience, which is wrapped up in that travel episode. So it's great to hear that Hope Air actually helps navigate that piece as well, because that is a significant cause of anxiety, I think, in people who are traveling a ways out of their community for healthcare. Hope Air is a non-profit organization. So From whom does it get its funding and support, and what types of patients does Hope help?
Right. So, HOPE-AIRS, first of all, HOPE-AIRS funding model is a public-private funding model. So, in BC, we would receive some funding from government. That funding is then supplemented by private sector donations that could be coming from generous corporations or foundations or individuals. HOPE-AIR presently operates two programs in BC. The first program is the Cancer Travel Support Program. That was launched by the government 3 years ago as part of its 10-year Cancer Action Plan. And that program is now up for renewal in 2026 onwards. And that is funded through the Ministry of Health. And then the second program that HOPE-AIR operates is effectively all other non-emergency travel for any other health condition, excluding cancer. And that's operated through the Family Residence Program that some people may know as being part of BC Kids and BC Women's Hospital. But HOPE-AIR is supporting, last year we would have supported over 6,000 patients and their caregivers or escorts where that was required in order for them to travel. We're supporting those patients in over 230 rural, remote, or underserved communities. So you could think about Kitimat or Trail or Creston, Dawson Creek, Prince Rupert, Kamloops, Terrace, Fort St. John. And also significantly, patients living in Prince George and Kelowna who find themselves having to travel to the Lower Mainland for very specific specialized care. So it's that combination of government funding, private sector funding, also some contributions from commercial airline partners like WestJet, for example, or Pacific Coastal Airlines or Central Mountain Air. And, really, it's a great example of how the delivery of a program in the healthcare system can be achieved through a combination of public and private sector support, so that for value for money, for every dollar that is invested by government, we amplify the impact of that through private sector funding, with the vast majority of all funding being spent on mission and program delivery.
So that's a pretty big operation you've got there, isn't it?
It's big in impact. It's actually quite small in terms of staffing. So, to give you an example, across the country, we operate in every province. We delivered over 40,000 medical travel arrangements. And, that is everything from airline flights, hotel nights, Uber transportation from airport to hospital, meals, et cetera, et cetera. Our client care team that receives applications, approves travel, then coordinates all of that with patients, social workers, healthcare professionals is less than 15 people.
Wow.
So I don't know how they do it. Maybe they don't sleep. It's really quite remarkable. BC has for a long time represented the single largest province of work for HOPE-AIR. That may be a combination of geography, of the large number of people living in northern communities like northern BC who have to routinely travel south for care. So the impact is mighty. The team is small, and we're quite proud of, all that we've been able to accomplish together with our partners. I often say that if everyone does their part, we solve the issue. That isn't always true with every healthcare system issue, but on this issue, there is no reason why any family, individual, or child who lives far from care and can't afford to get to that care, that they can't be supported. So this is a solvable problem, and it's amazing when we can work together within the healthcare system to solve an issue. And there are other positive impacts on the healthcare system which I'd love to talk to you about. But on this particular point, it's really, as our patients talk about Hope Air, it's sort of like, who are these angels? Who are these people who are, helping me with this hand out when I'm dealing with so much socioeconomic issues and I'm sick, and is going to relieve the burden of all of that. So it's a real privilege, to do this work.
Mm. And that's a very powerful vision and mandate that you have. And you can see that passion coming over in your voice and in your words. I just want to dial back a little bit because you talked about the impact that Hope Air has. I'm interested in, and British Columbia particularly, it seems to be overrepresented in the number of flights and services that you offer. What impact do you think Hope Air is having on the broader health system precisely?
So we know definitively that there are a number of positive impacts when we reduce or eliminate barriers to access for people who live long distances away. The first one is, we know that if Hope Air was not there, families, individuals, patients would cancel or delay their medical appointment. We have statistics from our research that demonstrate that. So what happens in that dynamic is people have no choice but to visit a local emergency room. In addition, if they delay their appointment, many people will enter the healthcare system in a much more acute state, therefore leading to longer hospital stays, et cetera, et cetera. So Hope Air patients report that when they've been supported by us, they experience a 36% decrease in emergency room visits in their local community, because now they have the ability to get to care that previously they couldn't afford to do so. They experience a dramatic decrease in hospital admissions. So those are real tangible benefits to the healthcare system that, for many reasons, has significant challenges and, struggling, especially as it relates to providing 24/7 care in smaller communities. So if we can, in our own way, relieve the pressure on emergency rooms and relieve the pressure on a overburdened healthcare system, that only benefits the healthcare system overall. And by the way, I should just mention that these issues are not unique to BC. Finding doctors to work in hospitals and emergency rooms in smaller communities is a challenge right across the country. That's not unique to British Columbia. So those are real benefits. And as government tries to maximize its investment in the healthcare system, if we can generate savings, so to speak, because people are spending a fewer number of nights in hospital, or they're not having to sit in an emergency room because they got access to the specialty care they needed, those funds can then be deployed to other priorities. And, when we wake up, we think about outcomes really primarily on better healthcare outcomes for patients. That's what brings us joy and satisfaction. But the benefits to the healthcare system are really quite profound. And I think that's why in BC, we've been working as a partner with government for 15 years or more. And I think government sees these efficiencies in the healthcare system, which are incredible to experience. So those would be some of the primary positive benefits to the healthcare system, outside of much better healthcare outcomes for patients and clients who are coming to Hope Air for support.
Yeah, and thank you for mentioning those. And you're right, there's multiple levels of impact there. There's impacts on the healthcare system costs. There's impact on health outcomes directly. And then there's the huge impact on access, which, as you say, is, I suspect, related to BC's geography. In an outsized benefit. You mentioned joining the organization in 2020, which is a watershed year for everybody on this planet, right? And I'm actually interested to know, I mean, everyone was profoundly affected by the pandemic, but what was the pandemic's effect on Hope Air? I mean, a lot of charities, nonprofits struggled after the pandemic. What was the effect on Hope Air and maybe on its demand for its services, interestingly?
Yeah, so everyone, as you say, was affected by the pandemic in different ways. In our world, there were three dynamics. The first dynamic was airlines reduced routes or ceased operation. So if you lived in a northern community and you had an appointment, in many cases, there was no airline to take you to that appointment. So that was barrier number one. Barrier number two, if we recall what was happening at the hospital level, as hospitals were struggling to manage ICU capacity due to COVID and other dynamics, many patients were put on wait lists because the hospitals just were unable to admit them when they were dealing with this new dynamic of very sick people coming in for COVID. And the third dynamic is people didn't feel safe to travel because nobody knew, will I catch this? Would I go on the plane even if I could get a plane that was flying? So at the time, like in March 2020, I sort of sat there alone in my office because all of our staff had to leave. We were all working remotely and, you know, my head in my hands thinking, well, we might as well just close up. Like, what's the point of staying here? For all the reasons I just mentioned. And I remember talking to the chair of our board at that time, David Garner, and we were, you know, thinking about, is there a game plan here? The answer is no. Does anyone know when this is going to end? The answer is no. So many questions. But in my own view, I sort of thought, if we could help one family or one patient during that year, that would be remarkable. And if we could help 10, that would be even better. And one of the things that we had the benefit of is, while the majority of our patients travel on commercial airlines, from April to October, we operate a program called the Hope Air Volunteer Pilot Program. So these are volunteers who are accredited pilots. Many of them are WestJet pilots or Harbor Air pilots, and they own their own aircraft. And they would typically fly into underserved communities where there's no commercial airline service or no commercial airline service at all, pick up a patient and a caregiver, bring them to the lower mainland, wait for them for their appointment to be finished, and then fly them home. So we were able to pivot a little bit where, as people applied for support, even if there was not commercial airline service, we had the volunteer pilots to help support families and individuals. So, you know, long story short, at the end of 2020 and at the end of 2021, both of which were, for us anyhow, pandemic years, we ended up supporting 5,000, 6,000 travel arrangements, which is remarkable. When you go back to that day, I had my head in my hands thinking, if we could do one, that would be a miracle. And the other thing I would mention is, for a lot of charities and not-for-profit organizations, they rely upon events as a way of fundraising. During the COVID years, nobody was doing events of any kind. But our partners, our donors, are so vested in the impact of Hope Air that we had many of those organizations say, look, I know we can't do a golf tournament this year, but we're going to make a donation equal to what that golf tournament would have generated in terms of funding support for Hope Air. Every partner we had stood with us, even in those dark, dark days. And so very, very grateful for that. And then, of course, we emerged on the other side of the pandemic. And as the healthcare system was able to work through the wait lists, as airlines restored commercial service in most communities, and as patients and individuals felt comfortable flying again, Then, you know, coming out of COVID, we saw soaring demand for Hope Air, like 85%, 100% year-over-year increase. So now we were in the opposite problem. Now it's like, oh my Lord, look at all of the demand here. How are we going to support that? How are we going to fund that? And fortunately, you know, we've been able to keep pace as all of these pieces came back into place post the pandemic.
There's a lot of moving parts of this organization. Even though your team is small, it generates a huge amount of activity and work. And your job as CEO actually probably involves a fair bit of travel. That's time away from your family. You're the organizational frontman, undoubtedly. And I guess a level of burden of the organization probably rests on your shoulders along with the board there. That's probably a recipe for pressure, I think. I'd just like to ask you, what a little slightly more personal question, what keeps you motivated in your role as CEO, as Chief Hope Officer, and why you do what you do?
There are so many great charitable organizations around the country and in BC, but not every organization that you may choose to work with provides immediate impact every day. And one of the distinguishing and defining things about Hope Air is that every day in an airport, on an airline, arriving at YVR to go to Vancouver General or BC Kids or BC Women's, are one or more individuals who are only able to get there through the work of Hope Air and our partners. So just to put it in really personal terms, I was traveling with my wife from Horseshoe Bay over to the Sunshine Coast. And it was in the summer, it was a very hot day. And if anyone who's listening has ever been waiting for the ferry, you would remember that there's no shade really. You can't idle your car, you can't run the air conditioning. And that day, the ferry was 2 hours late. So many people got out of their car and just walking around. And I was one of those people walking around. And I noticed a car, and the woman who owned the car was sitting on the passenger side of the vehicle with her legs out and had a dog bowl of water, and a little dog was drinking this water. And I love dogs, so I went up and said, "Hi, what's going on?" And she said, "You know, this is killing me." And I said to her something like, "I know what you mean. It's very, very hot, and it's a very regrettable that, you know, this ferry is late." And she said, "No, you don't understand. I live on Campbell River. I'm being treated for cancer at Surrey Hospital. I have to coordinate two ferries to get to my appointment on time. And if there's a delay in one of the ferries, I can't get to my appointment on time. I'm low income. And even if I could move my appointment, I can't afford the cost of staying in Vancouver for that rescheduled appointment." And I was wearing my Hope Air baseball cap. And I said to her, I said, "I'm really sorry to hear about that." I said, "You may not have ever heard of this organization, but I work with a charity called Hope Air, and we provide free flights and other travel supports from the island and other parts." And her first response was, "Why would somebody do that for me?" So I wrote down my contact details on a piece of paper. I gave it to her. She applied for Hope Air support the next day, and she's been flown by our volunteer pilots many times. Those stories of how people's lives have been saved, changed, made better, I get those messages all the time. We get cards that come in the mail with someone handwriting saying, "Hope Air changed my life," or emails or telephone calls. At many of the events that we do, patients come and they just tell their story. So this work, you know, you kind of have to be all in. You can't fake it. You either really believe in this mission, that no one should be left behind because of where they live or who they are or what their postal code is. You have to believe that. And when your gas tank gets empty, so to speak, it's these stories that sort of refill your gas tank. So that's really the energy flow, the spark that keeps not just me, but our entire team kind of waking up every day to say, how can we make a difference today? And we are intensely focused on the patient experience and everything we do. The feedback that I hear continuously from patients is, you know, thank God for Hope Air. I don't know what I would have done without them.
Well, thank you for sharing that. You've communicated a compelling vision for the organization today. And I think you've actually, with that last answer, answered how you're able as an organization to achieve so much with such a small team because of that compelling vision and that the values that people hold and the recognition that the reward they receive from fulfilling that role. So thank you for that. We're coming to the end of the interview, but I have one more question for you. If listeners who have heard you speaking today, maybe they know someone who might benefit from Hope Air services, maybe someone who's living in a rural area, a really rural area, you know, outside of the towns you mentioned, because a large proportion of our, particularly our Indigenous population, live in tiny, tiny communities, making it even more challenging to get to the larger centres. If they know of someone who might benefit from Hope Air, or maybe they would like to support the work of Hope Air, what should they do?
Yeah, so we would really encourage anyone in the healthcare system that is, you know, patient-facing, that if they know of families or individuals that are struggling and have to travel longer distances for medical specialty care, they can go on our website at hopeair.ca. It's a pretty simple application. A healthcare professional or a social worker can make the application on behalf of a patient, or the patient themselves can make that application. For patients who may struggle with digital technology or not comfortable filling out an application online, there's also a 1-888 toll-free number they can call, and our staff would take your application over the phone. It typically takes us 2 to 3 days to review and then approve applications, and then everything goes forward from there. So that's the biggest thing right now, is to make sure that everyone who should be aware of the work of Hope Air, access to healthcare, make sure that people know. And of course, for those who might be interested in supporting Hope Air with a donation or in some other way, there's also lots of information about how you can do that on our website at hopeair.ca.
Perfect. Well, thank you for that, Mark. And thank you again for coming on the show and taking us through Hope Air's amazing and valuable and impactful work.
It's a great pleasure. Thanks again for having me.
You've been listening to Mark Rubenstein, the CEO of Hope Air. To find out more about the work of Hope Air, please check out the links and resources included in this episode's show notes and on our website at www.nhpqi.ca/podcast, where you'll also find links to our other episodes. But until next time, it's goodbye from us, our guest, Mark Rubenstein, and your host, I'm Sher Chewy. If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycomms@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation of the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Sher Chewy and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Levi Giles and Matt Walker of Expression North. Original music by Daniel Chewy. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes on our website at nhpqi.ca.